Stuff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk. Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Let's take a look at a fantastic new book. It's called The Red Journey, an oral history of Liverpool Football Club, celebrating 125 years of LFC. It goes year by year, decade by decade. And of course, it goes through all the glory days and the lows as well. The man behind it is Mark Platt. Morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Steve.
Right, what's the idea behind, I say, an oral history of Liverpool Football Club? Describe to our listeners what that actually means. The book doesn't talk to you.
No. It's just basically, it's the story of Liverpool Football Club from 1892 to present day, but told solely in the voice of the players and the managers and the key people at the club, you know, throughout that time.
Yeah, so it's a unique way of presenting the history of Liverpool Football Club. I don't think it's been done like this before.
No. I think, you know, there's a lot of great Liverpool history books out there. But, you know, they are sort of the standard history books, you know, that just tell the story of the club from the writer's perspective and, you know, through research. But this is, yeah, as I say, just solely through the quotes from the players, you know, covering all the key moments in the history.
Right, it goes right back to the very beginning. Obviously, a little bit more difficult to get quotes from some of the key contributors to Liverpool Football Club right back at the start of it all. So where did your research take you?
Well, just like, you know, I think it was important to sort of get the voice of these early sort of characters, the early legends of Liverpool, and because that's what, you very rarely see or hear from these people. Or not, if you don't hear from them now because they're no longer with us. But, you know, in print, you don't often see many quotes from them in print. So that just involved a lot of research, you know, through old newspapers and programmes, other books, and, you know, just to give a flavour, I think, of what was going through their minds at these key times in the club's history.
The very first line here is from John Holding. It says, "You, brackets Everton, must look for another site. Here is the notice to quit my ground." Yep. At the start of it all.
Yeah, well, that's it. If it wasn't for that, we probably wouldn't be here now, would we?
Absolutely. That was where it all began. You've got all sorts of quotes from players early on, going back to 1900s. Names that we wouldn't be too familiar with, but it probably gives an idea of the foundation of the club.
Yeah, you know, the likes of Alex Raisbeck. He was the club's first superstar, captain the club to the first title in 1901. You know, when you go on through to the first FA Cup final appearance, 1914, the likes of, you know, Sam Hardy, Ephraim Longworth, and through the years to the 20s, Elisha Scott, Donald McKinley, you know, the back-to-back title-winning teams. Then it goes right through, you know, through the 30s, which was quite a barren time. A few quotes from Matt Busby, obviously legend at Manchester United. A lot of people probably don't realise how important he was to Liverpool Football Club. He was the captain going into the Second World War. You know, influential figure who helped the club sign Billy Liddle. Huge influence on the likes of Bob Paisley when he was a player here. So, yeah, you know, obviously those early years aren't covered as in-depth as the later years, but, you know, it's just a nod to those times and to those legends who sort of yet laid the foundations for the club.
You mentioned Elisha Scott. There's a character that you've done a documentary on before. Yep. Give us an idea of the impact of Elisha Scott on Liverpool Football Club.
Well, Elisha Scott was Liverpool goalkeeper for almost 22. Well, he was at the club for 22 years, you know, the longest span at the club by any player. You know, and from the research we've done and, you know, the quotes that I've uncovered for the book, you know, he's just such a dominant character at the club, you know, and such a favourite of the fans. You know, the fans absolutely adored Elisha. I think he was one of the first, although Alex Raisbeck was probably the first superstar at the club. Elisha Scott was probably the first idol of the supporters. I think, you know, in the documentary we've done on LFC TV a few years back, it was called Leisha, which was his nickname, the first king of the cop. And, you know, that's what he was. He was the subject of the first chant from the crowd. They chant his name.
So he was held in the regard of a Kenny or
Gerrard,
or yeah, he had that sort of...
Yeah, he's up there with, you know, probably your top five legends of Liverpool, probably Elisha Scott. Yeah, he'd have to be up there.
And what was it, his charisma?
I think it was his charisma.
His game, his...
Yeah, obviously he was a great goalkeeper, represented Ireland as well. And it was just his relationship with the supporters. I think he'd talk to the supporters on the cop when the ball was down the other end. He'd, you know, be famous for barking out instructions to his defenders. And I think it was just his general rapport with the fans. And yeah, and he famously got on so well with Dixie Dean as well. There's a lot of stories about him and Dixie Dean, they were the two big idols on Merseyside at that time.
Right, it's a book that literally you could thumb out any page and start reading from, isn't it? You don't really have to start the narrative at the beginning.
Yeah, that's right.
You could go anywhere within it and you'll find a certain year and some fascinating stuff. So I've literally just put my thumb in near the start and it's come out at 1938. So it's a page that's got Billy Little and Matt Busby on it. Now, the Billy Little story, who, of course, he was Liverpool, wasn't
that's
he?
That's right, yeah.
You know, but people named the club after him or him after the club, whatever way you want to look at it. The story here is fantastic just in terms of his arrival at Liverpool Football Club. And you've taken this quote about him talking about returning home shortly before midnight on a Saturday night. He'd been to a youth club, saw the light on in the living room. His parents were normally in bed, so he was obviously a little bit surprised. He wasn't prepared for what his mum was going to say. She couldn't keep silent. He walked in and she said, "Willie, how would you like to live in Liverpool? I could only stand and stare." Yeah. It's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. It's like something out of a play.
Yeah.
Billy Little, I mean, the start of the story for Billy?
Yeah, definitely. You know, that was 1938, I think. Obviously, Billy's career, he was only a young boy then. His career was interrupted by the Second World War. He made his debut in a wartime fixture. You know, by the time the club come out of the war in 1946-47, he was ready then. He was ready to become the big star and influence the club to the title win in 1946-47. And
well, he was only 16 in 38, yeah. So of course he sort of matured and grown, hadn't he, to that point?
Yeah. So I say by the time the war was over, he was the player that he was ready to sort of, you know, stamp his authority on the team.
How did the war affect Liverpool Football Club?
Probably in a good way, because I don't think they were in a good place going into the 1939. They probably wasn't considered to be one of the leading teams. They come out of the war in 1946, and he wasn't considered to be one of the challenges for the championship that season. But they were a bit of an unknown quantity, and I think they took everybody's surprise. And you know, they won the league that year, you know, dramatically, and come with a late charge, which became sort of typical of, you know, later Liverpool title winning teams.
Right, we'll talk about the 60s, 70s and 80s very shortly. It's a brand new book by Mark Platt called The Red Journey, celebrating 125 years of Liverpool Football Club. And it's done through quotes from individual characters, players, managers, which have helped build this story together. It's fantastic stuff. We'll have a look at some of those glory years very shortly.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Brand new book out called The Red Journey, an oral history of Liverpool Football Club. It's looking at Liverpool throughout 125 years, and it's done through quotes from individual characters. Now, Platty's obviously not that old. He's the man who's written it. But from a certain decade onwards, you have interviewed an awful lot of people. So if we picked up at the 60s, let's face it, you've probably met quite a few of these characters,
yeah,
haven't you?
Yeah,
your Ian St. John's, Chris Lawler's, your Roger Hunt's. So there is a lot of quotes in here that you've actually sourced yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah? Let's pick up on Saint then, and the start of perhaps Liverpool's resurgence, rise to the top, late 50s, early 60s. And Ian St. John must have been a fascinating sort of starting point, just in terms of giving you a perspective on the club.
Yeah, I think the importance of the Saints is, you know, can never be underestimated in terms of the modern history, because he was there at the start with Bill Shankly. You know, he formed the spine of Shankly's team. He was the spearhead of that spine. You know, Tommy Lawrence at the back, Rod Yates in defence, the Saints up front. So important, such an important figure. Scored a hat-trick on his debut at Goodison, and, you know, even though we lost that game in the Poole Senior Cup tie, the fans just took to him from day one and never looked back. Obviously, most famous for scoring the goal at Wembley in 65 that won us our first FA Cup.
The intelligence of Shankly bringing these players together is amazing, really. So he brings Ian St. John in. Great quote from Saint. "He had a quick temper, which was a bad thing. The fact I wasn't frightened of anybody was a good thing. After just one training session after I signed, I made my debut away to Everton, and I scored 3 in front of 70,000. He'd hired me to be his hitman." Brilliant, you know, just great. So he's identified Ian St. John and also Ron Yates, the Colossus. And another wonderful quote here from Ron, who says, "I remember asking him, whereabouts in England is Liverpool?" So he's brought together all these characters, hasn't he, to make this side, to make this club into what it's now become.
Yeah, I mean, I think Shanks was a big admirer of both players, you know, from his time as Huddersfield manager. He'd, you know, obviously he knew he had his contact in Scotland. He knew all about them, and I think if Huddersfield would have backed them with money, he might have took them to Huddersfield, which, you know, the story could have turned out a lot different. But, you know, he got the backing of the board at Liverpool back then, in 1961. And yet, with those signings, the club took off.
So Liverpool's rise in the 60s was meteoric, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, throughout 8 years in Division 2 in the 50s, and they was a sleeping giant, the club, but they were never considered one of the big clubs that they are today, because, for one fact, they never won the FA Cup. And that was Bill Shankly's great ambition when he took over. Obviously, first of all, to get Liverpool back to the top flight, but to win the FA Cup. Once he won the FA Cup, he could be considered, you know, a truly great club, and then he went into Europe and from there. So, you know, they've won the league, I think, before Shankly came, 5 times. But, as you say, back then, it's the importance of the FA Cup, and it was winning that FA Cup before they could truly be considered a great club.
It was huge, and it's an obviously massive marker point for all the players that you'll talk to that were involved with, whether it's, you know, your Callies, your St John's. But also another big occasion was the Inter Milan match.
Yeah.
And Liverpool coming into Europe and trying to make a mark in Europe. And there's a fantastic story behind the Inter Milan match. And Saint even moans about it to this day, doesn't he? The bent referee.
Yeah, in Italy in the second leg. Yeah, obviously we won the first leg 3-1. Could have been 4-1. We had a goal disallowed, Chris Lawler. And, you know, when obviously it's famous or infamous now how we lost 3-0 at the San Siro. And
this is a semi-final of the European Cup, the second leg.
Yeah, we'd have been the first British club to get to the final. Couple of dubious goals, and yeah, you know, speaking to the players who were involved in that, there's still a lot of bitterness, the fact that, you know, the referee sort of deprived the club of making history that then, or those players making history and becoming the first British team to go on and win, well, to get to the European Cup final. I think to play Benfica in the final, if they would have beat Inter Milan in the semi-final, they'd fancy the chances against Benfica.
I just love all these quotes from Shankly about this. He says, of course, the decisions on the pitch were poor. Above all things in continental football, you expect to get protection for the keeper. The referee never protected Lawrence in this case. Those goals were a disgrace. You'd be up on an FA charge in this day and age, wouldn't you, for these sorts of quotes?
I think Shankly always had a distrust, didn't he? Especially then, it was the first season in Europe, and a bit of a distrust about the, you know, the foreign officials and some of the antics that went on with the foreign teams back then.
His quotes are part of what galvanised Liverpool as well, aren't they? And made it the club it is. So he's talking about after the game, and he says, the people were sweeping the streets with enormous flags. And I said to our players, all right, we've lost, but see what you have done. Inter Milan are the unofficial champions of the world. Yeah. That's great, isn't it?
You know, that's what he did. You know, he instilled a great self-belief in his players. No, and he built them up, you know, to believe that they were the best in the world.
Let's get into the 70s. European success on several fronts. Some of the games perhaps aren't even remembered in the light they should be. So if you went to 1973, and people talk about 76, you know, the Bruges final, the doubleheader there, or 77, 78, but perhaps 73 isn't a common conversation. How have you covered it in here?
Yeah, 73, obviously that was Liverpool's first European trophy, the UEFA Cup. And you're right, it's probably, with 5 European Cups that have followed, it's probably a bit forgotten, those early UEFA Cup triumphs, 76 against Bruges as well. But, you know, that's a famous story as well, 73, the first game at Anfield in the first leg. It was a two-legged tie back then, the final. You know, it was abandoned because of a waterlogged pitch. They came back the next day, Shankly sort of tweaked his team slightly. They come out, they won 3-0. Great first-leg result, but they go over to Germany and then, you know, it's back to the wall stuff. They go 2-0 down, and, you know, at one point it looks like they're going to be overwhelmed by this, which was a great emerging Borussia Mönchengladbach team. And unfortunately, they hold on, and yet they win the first trophy, and it all stems, all builds from there. Then
quality players and tough players. Tommy Smith,
yep,
the Anfield Iron, very much part of the scene there, and the influence.
Yeah, he was the captain.
The
he was the captain back then, Tommy Smith, and, you know, that was the start. That was like the Shankly's second great team coming to fruition. The first great team had won league and FA Cup honours in the 50s, 60s. And this was obviously, they'd suffered disappointment in the 71 FA Cup final, lost to Arsenal. They narrowly missed out on the league in in 72, and then 73. Yeah, this second great team, Kevin Keegan's in the at the team now, and that comes to fruition. They win the UEFA Cup and they win the league title as well.
So many significant games in the 70s. You go on to Liverpool against Newcastle at Wembley in the FA Cup final in 74, a game in which Terry McDermott was spotted.
Yep.
But Alan Kennedy infamously says they didn't take him for another 4 years after after that one. This game, I think, was it Phil Thompson who was the star of the show in this one?
Yeah, Liverpool had changed. I mean, 1973-74, Shankly's great ambition was to win the European Cup that season. We'd lost to Red Star Belgrade, second round. And I think the way the Yugoslavs played that time, you know, passing from the back, and that left a lasting impression in Liverpool, sort of changed the style of play. And that involved bringing Phil Thompson in as a ball playing centre back, as opposed to a sort of big stopper as in the shape of like Larry Lloyd. So Liverpool were playing more from the back then. And at Wembley that day, you know, it came. It just, everything sort of was the way Liverpool wanted to play that day, playing from the back, and he just passed Newcastle off the park and, you know, won the most one-sided FA Cup finals in history.
Big, big game for Liverpool. You've dealt with the change of manager as well in the, I say, mid-70s, 73, 74. Obviously, Shankly stepped into one side.
Yep.
Maybe a decision he later regretted.
Mm-hmm.
How have you covered it, and how are people's memories about what actually happened on those days?
Well, I think everyone was just devastated, wasn't it, when they heard the news that, you know, the great Bill Shankly had resigned from Liverpool. And for some people, I think, you know, they thought this could be the end, you know, how the club going to carry on. But, you know, as we know now, what was great about Liverpool back then was the continuity. You know, it was a masterstroke by the club to put Bob Paisley in charge. You know, he took the club to even greater success. But I think at the start, you know, the players are quoted there, they would have had the doubts about Bob Paisley. He was a great coach, but how he'd adapt to management, you know, he wasn't so sure. And, you know, fortunately, yeah, he proved all the doubters wrong.
And although we say Bob Paisley was an absolute genius and things seemed to come easy, as you put in here, there's a quote from him: "I was the manager and the job was no bed of roses. I found it tough."
Yeah, he did. You know, the first season he was in charge, no trophies. You know, I think we finished second in the league. Which by Liverpool standards, anyone else's standards would have been a good season, but Liverpool standards, obviously, it wasn't the best. But he recovered next season. We'd again done another double of league and UEFA Cup.
We've only got 3 minutes, so I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a story from each decade because there's far too much to cover. Let's talk about 1976 and Liverpool winning the league title. So this was the sort of the prelude from what was going to happen in terms of the season after. They would win the European Cup and the league as well. But that season, 1976, they had to win the UEFA Cup against Bruges. But the famous game against Wolves, the away game against Wolves, which would decide the league title, and QPR were very much in the hunt as well. So set the scene for us.
Yeah, well, QPR, you know, they were a vibrant young team under Dave Sexton. They'd finished their games. They played their 42 matches. They were top of the league. It was all down to Liverpool going to Wolves. Liverpool needing to win, and Wolves had to win as well because Wolves were fighting relegation. So, massive game for both clubs. Liverpool go a goal down. Steve Kindon scores for Wolves. So, the title, you know, was slipping away from us. And, you know, three late goals, they'll turn it round. Thousands upon thousands of Liverpool fans at Molineux that night. You know, it's gone down in folklore. And it was probably one of the most dramatic title victories of the 18 that we've won.
And the funny story behind it was pre-match when Phil Thompson asked if he could let his brother in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was that many supporters travelled down there. You know, back then football was so different, games weren't all ticket. So, you know, there's probably about 30, 40,000 Liverpool fans go down to Molineux, to the Black Country. And, you know, obviously they can't all get in. And the dressing room at Molineux, then, back then, the door opened out onto the street. Phil Thompson looks out the window, sees a lot of his friends and family. Asked Bob Paisley if he could open the door, let them in, which Bob Paisley agrees. And next thing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Liverpool fans just streaming through the dressing room, out through the tunnel and side of the pitch and onto the terraces.
The manager says, "Is that how many brothers you've got?" And I put that politely. Let's go to 1986. You've spoken to Rushie, Ronnie Whelan, Jan Molby, Craig Johnston, Alan Hansen, all about the cup final against Everton. It's fascinating to look at what they're saying about the pressure that they felt that was being placed on them at the time.
Yeah, going into the final, obviously, Liverpool won the league the week before at Chelsea. I think what it was for the pressure. You talk about pressure. Liverpool hadn't won the FA Cup for 12 years. They'd won everything else. They dominated in Europe. They dominated the league. But for some reason, they just couldn't win the FA Cup. They'd lost in the final to United 77. They'd lost, you know, a number of semi-finals. And I think that was becoming a bit of a jinx to them. And obviously, coming up against Everton as well. Everton had ran us close for the title. So it was always going to be a tough match. So yeah, the pressure was massive. First all, Merseyside FA Cup final. I was quite surprised at how they talk about that and the pressure, how it really affected them going into that game.
And yet, as fans, sometimes you just think they're calm, collected, and they're just going about their business. But they obviously felt the weight of the world there. We're quickly going to get on to 2005 and not talk about the actual European Cup final itself, but just the conversation that went on after it. And you've got the quotes from Steven Gerrard about him actually staying at the football club, but the decision to stay there as opposed to go to Chelsea, which of course was a massive factor in terms of Liverpool and what they managed to achieve in the noughties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to lose Steven Gerrard back then would have been just such a massive blow, wouldn't it, to the club and the fans. And I can remember at the time when it looked like he was gone and everyone was devastated, and then just so dramatic how it turned around and, you know, it was announced that he was staying. It was, yeah, a great moment.
And he's talking here about how Mourinho got into his head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It almost convinced him that was the right thing to do. Yeah, you'll only win league titles. You'll only win silverware with Chelsea.
Yeah, but luckily he saw the light, didn't he?
He said, my head was messed up. Thankfully, he made the right decision at the end. Look, there's so many brilliant quotes in here. As I say, you don't have to start from the beginning, but the Red Journey is 125 years old, and it's detailed in this oral history of Liverpool Football Club, which Mark Platt has written. And I'd recommend it. You might want to give it as a Christmas present to someone. It's fantastic. How long does it take you to write and research?
Well, best part of a year, but obviously a lot of research has been taken. The research it took, like, you know, for years throughout, like, the time I've been writing about the club. So, yeah, going back over 20 years of being gathering quotes for this, and a lot of interviews recently. So, but writing it all down is probably the best part of a year.
Labour of love. Way to escape, Mrs. Platt.
Yeah, I can't say that, but, you know, labour of love, you know, I love doing it, so, yeah.
Brilliant stuff. Have a look. It's in the bookshops now. It's in where?
Yeah, it's in Waterstones. You know, you can get it from Tacuba, on the publishers, their website, Amazon, yeah, and all the normal places.
The Red Journey, Liverpool Football Club, over 125 years.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.